From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, New Yorkers decide in November whether to strip state officials convicted of a felony of their pensions. Our political observer Alan Shartok shares his thoughts on the other ballot question this November to hold or not hold the Constitutional Convention. And environmental advocates react to the announcement that the EPA will rescind former President Obama's Clean Power Plan. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. New Yorkers have the power this November to decide whether some state officials convicted of a felony should be stripped of their pensions. But as the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt reports, the proposal would not apply to two former legislative leaders and several former associates of Governor Cuomo accused of corruption.
The ballot proposition before voters on Election Day would allow a judge to determine whether a state official convicted of crimes like bribery or bid rigging should lose all or part of their pension. But there is one important limitation. The pension forfeiture provision would only apply to crimes committed after January 1, 2018. That means the two former legislative leaders who face potential retrial for crimes they are accused of committing during the first half of this decade would get to keep their pensions. Both former Speaker Sheldon Silver and former State Senate Leader Dean Skelos saw their 2015 convictions overturned on appeal. Skelos, along with his son Adam, will be retried next year. And Silver could also face retrial, depending on an expected ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court. Nine former associates of Governor Cuomo, including the governor's former closest aide, also face trials within the next year over an economic development corruption scandal. But because the alleged crimes took place in the past, they also would be allowed to keep their state pensions if they're convicted. Blair Horner with the New York Public Interest Research Group agrees that the proposal is limited.
People that are currently under investigation are people that are likely not to be covered by this provision. Unless they do an additional crime after January 1st, 2018, the cases that are currently under investigation and in the process are cases that will not be affected by this provision.
Under current law, public officials who began their jobs after 2011 are already subject to pension forfeiture if they commit felonies. So the ballot proposal applies to only a small subset of public officers, those elected or appointed before 2011 and who commit crimes after 2018. Horner says, nevertheless, his group supports the ballot proposal.
Whether or not it will make a big difference in how people behave, I'm doubtful, but it's sort of like chicken soup. It can't hurt.
The League of Women Voters also backs the measure. But the League's Jennifer Wilson says that the threat of pension forfeiture does not go far enough in fighting a wave of corruption at the Capitol. She says she would have liked Cuomo and the legislature to propose changes that would prevent corruption in the first place.
We would have much rather them done something by the way of campaign finance reform or done something that really would have had an impact as opposed to this punishment for after you've committed the crime. We would really love to see regulations in place to prevent these crimes from occurring and prevent legislators from committing these corrupt acts while in office.
Wilson says there is a proposal on the ballot next month that could potentially make bigger changes to prevent corruption, and that is the question of whether New Yorkers should hold a full constitutional convention and open up the entire document to revision. Opponents argue that the event would be controlled by the existing political establishment, though, and they doubt whether much could be accomplished. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Alan, let's turn to the discussion that you had with Dr. Gerald Benjamin, your old friend and colleague from the Benjamin Center in New Paltz, about the Constitutional Convention, the ballot question coming up for New Yorkers.
Well, it's coming up real soon. New Yorkers are going to have to make up their minds. It's sort of an optimism versus pessimism. Let me just explain. The legislature isn't doing things to take care of its own ethics problems, and they never will. Why would they? Would they put term limits, which are wildly popular, on themselves? No, of course not. Would they do initiative and referendum so that the voters of New York State can come up with a bill that makes sense that they refuse because of the money and everything else to do? The problem here is that the same people who get elected to the legislature are in control of the electoral process. They know how to get people nominated. Now, sometimes they run themselves, but let's assume they don't do that. They all have a cousin Louis who they can do. So if you're a natural born pessimist, I am, you say, well, do we want to spend tens of millions of dollars on yet another failed attempt? Jerry Benjamin, a great guy, Hank DeLay, and a whole bunch of people are saying, no, we have to do it because at least it offers the possibility of change. We're optimistic that this can happen. Well, we've had them before. They failed before. They argue that they haven't failed. Yeah, they did fail. So do I think that New Yorkers have decided on this issue? I don't think they've decided. I talk to a lot of people. They say, no, they're not going to vote for it. I talk to other people. They say, yeah, well, it's our only chance. We're going to do it. And that's what it's really all about.
The other person that you spoke with this week, which was quite interesting, is the new president of the University at Albany, Dr. Javidan Rodriguez, who is not only have a special connection to Puerto Rico and the issue of disaster assistance and analysis, but a fascinating discussion overall about college president and their relationship, for example, with politicians.
Well, that's right, David. One of the things that I had such interest in is the concept of universal education. We do know we have a segregated educational system. We do know that the people who, some people are paying $60,000 a year for college. Think about that. And it's extraordinary. So here we have a state university which provides access. It's great. But it also has to have standards, David. And standards are, you know, you can come. We'll make it possible that there'll be equality here in terms at least of equality of opportunity. But if you show up, you've got to work hard and you got to do the work. And he's an example of somebody, a single mom raised him and his siblings. The value of education was inculcated into all of them. And here's a guy who's now the president of one of the most prestigious public universities in the world because he stuck to it. This balance between standards and access is huge in public education. Now, we also know, David, that politicians are not above squeezing a university. I've heard so many stories. In my case, I had somebody come to a college president and said, we don't like what he's writing, fire him. And the president at the time at New Paltz said, can't do that, he's got tenure. Thereby, I often kid around saying one of the few examples of why tenure did what it was supposed to do, you know, in the first place, to protect me and to protect all academics. I asked him if he'd ever been leaned on by a politician. He said no. And I think many politicians know better than doing that. But there's always somebody who comes and says, I have a nephew, you have a job, will you do this? Can you help get this kid into the college? It is one of the things that stand-up presidents have to look at and say, is my job worth it? The same way that Republican United States senators right now, who we know are appalled at the behavior of Donald Trump, but who are worried about being defeated in a primary by right-wingers, have to say, is this a time for my profile and courage? Same thing goes for college presidents.
There's another ballot question New Yorkers are looking at, and that is the power this November to decide whether some state officials convicted of a felony should be stripped of their pensions. Our Karen DeWitt reported on that this week. The ballot question would not apply, however, to two former legislative leaders and several former associates of Governor Cuomo accused of corruption.
Well, obviously, it would only count going forward. You can't pass an ex post facto law here. However, I think it's going to be wildly popular. You know, I've often wondered about why people do dishonest things. They certainly know when they're doing them that they're dishonest. At least I hope they know that. And one wonders how greedy you can be that you endanger your life, going to prison, your parents, your children, your wife. And one of the arguments legislators are making against this is that wives and husbands of female legislators should not suffer because of what their spouses did. Well, that's a tough one. I can tell you that right now, because they also share in the benefits. I have a feeling this is going to pass overwhelmingly.
Legislative Gazette political observer, Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gastina. New York Congressman Sean Patrick Maloney held a recent telephone town hall meeting, and with the Las Vegas shooting fresh in mind, callers had questions about gun control. They also wanted to know where Maloney stands on a single-payer health care system. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn listened in.
The telephone town hall happened to take place on the same date as the one-year anniversary of Newburgh coming under a state of emergency due to PFOS drinking water contamination in Washington Lake. Lena from Wappingers Falls in Dutchess County said her daughter had applied to a number of colleges for nursing and wanted to attend Mount St. Mary College in Newburgh. However, Lena is concerned about the water.
That's going to make our decision. She got accepted to 7 colleges. And I really wanted Mount St. Mary, but the water...
Well, let me put your mind at ease. So right now, the water in Newburgh is perfectly clean and perfectly safe to drink.
The city draws water from the Catskill Aqueduct while a carbon filtration system is under construction. Sean from Stormville, also in Dutchess County, had a question about health care.
The question I have is the new health bill, the old health bill, and the health bill that the senators and congressmen get and their staff.
Right.
Will it be one bill that's good for one is good for all?
I'm on Obamacare. I'm on the D.C. exchange. My staff is on the D.C. exchange. That's the way it is right now.
The Democrat talked about a provision in the GOP's American Health Care Act to replace the Affordable Care Act or Obamacare.
They would have exempted congressmen from the types of waivers that state can get by virtue of the fact that we're on the D.C. exchange and D.C. is in the state, right? So I don't want to run up the score on them. I don't know that they did it intentionally, but it's just one more reason why the thing they've come up with is half baked and not ready for prime time. So, but no problem for me, man. I mean, we shouldn't get any special treatment.
Nancy from Middletown said her 24-year-old son is addicted to heroin, and she does not believe enough is being done to stem the heroin and opioid crisis.
I'm so glad you called in. I mean, it's so important that people listening know how serious this is. I mean, you're right. I don't go to a community anywhere in the Hudson Valley that hasn't lost somebody to this terrible thing.
Maloney asked how her son became addicted.
My son was a football player. He hurt his leg. Started with pain pills and
met a couple
of kids that played baseball and they introduced him to the fine drug of what we know as heroin.
You should know that we're going to pass this week in Washington a budget deal. It looks nothing like what the president wanted, by the way, but a bunch of us in a bipartisan fashion are going to pass a budget deal that will include a lot more money for heroin treatment programs, prevention programs.
Kay from Middletown expressed overall concern about President Trump.
I've got a lot of concerns about this president, too. I am absolutely determined to find ways that we can work together to get something done. But we only have one president at a time, and I've said many times, Kay, that we don't have a presidency to waste. We need to get after the infrastructure we need in this country. We got real problems we got to work on. And so I hope the president settles down. I really do think that he could get some things done if he worked across the aisle a little bit. I mean, that's what I try to do. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I don't think that's going to help, to be quite honest with you, because his determination to be a dictator is by far greater than what he feels should be the right thing to do.
I'm glad the founding fathers, you know, wrote the Constitution the way they did. The system is bigger than any one man, including Donald Trump.
Maloney's telephone town hall followed one he held a month ago.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Scott Pruitt announced this week that he would rescind the Obama administration's Clean Power Plan. Environmental advocates are critical of the move, noting that the cap-and-trade style plan to limit carbon emissions from coal-fired power plants is already working in the Northeast.
The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
The Clean Power Plan was designed to cut U.S. carbon dioxide emissions to 32% below 2005 levels by 2030. The rule dictated specific emission targets for states based on power plant emissions and gave officials broad latitude on how to achieve those reductions. In Hazard, Kentucky on Monday, EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt said he would rescind the rule, as heard here on Fox News.
The past administration was unapologetic. They were using every bit of power, every bit of authority to use the EPA to pick winners and losers in how we generate electricity in this country. And that's wrong.
Adirondack Council spokesman John Sheehan says the announcement is not a surprise, but it is disappointing.
This is a landmark regulation that we believed would not only help curb climate change, but would also assist in reducing the amount of acid rain that's falling on the Adirondacks. The Clean Power Plan is basically modeled on the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative in the Northeast, which is a power sector cleanup program.
Adirondack Wild Friends of the Forest Preserve partner David Gibson calls the move counterproductive. He notes the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative that the plan is modeled on proves its viability.
It's been shown here in the Northeast that the power sources in the Northeast are still producing power, and yet have dramatically decreased their carbon emissions through a cap-and-trade program that's been successful. Trump is simply trying to end whatever President Obama did, regardless of the merits of whatever program it may be.
Author, activist, and founder of 350.org, Bill McKibben, says repealing the Clean Power Plan takes away a framework to put the nation toward modest carbon emission reductions.
Our problem around climate change is not that we're not going to do the right thing eventually. 50 years from now, we're going to have shut down all the coal-fired power plants and we're going to be running the country on solar panels. The problem is, if we wait any longer, it'll be a broken planet that we're running on renewable energy. We're right up to the edge. And so every day and week of delay, every time that we extend the life of these power plants, we're breaking the back of the climate system before our eyes. And that's what makes it all terrifying and maddening.
Bracewell, LLP, is a Washington, D.C.-based legal firm representing energy and technology firms. Environmental Strategies Group Director Jeff Homestead headed the EPA's Office of Air and Radiation from 2001 to 2005. He says the biggest concern that industry has is the new regulatory authority EPA would have under the Clean Power Plan.
It wasn't the fact that they were regulating CO2, but in the Clean Power Plan, EPA said that it had authority to restructure the entire U.S. power sector. And in fact, they said, well, we think the best way to get these emission reductions is to close down a number of coal-fired power plants and to replace them with natural gas, but primarily with wind and solar. And that was, I think, troubling to virtually everybody in the power sector.
The Clean Power Plan was never implemented because the Supreme Court put the plan on hold last year. New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman led the legal effort to defend the plan. Calls to his office were not returned in time for broadcast. In a statement Monday, he said, quote, "The Trump administration's persistent and indefensible denial of climate change and their continued assault on actions essential to stemming its increasing devastation is reprehensible, and I will use every available legal tool to fight their dangerous agenda," unquote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Spreading hate or sounding the alarm. A newspaper in Fulton County, New York, is facing criticism from subscribers for publishing a series of front-page articles about the Ku Klux Klan's presence in the community. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas explains.
The story began in February when News Channel 13 reported that leaflets had been placed on windshields in the village of Fort Plain, imploring them to love their own race. The Gloversville-based Leader Herald newspaper answered the TV station's KKK recruitment underway in Fort Plain headline a few days later with their own KKK flyers distributed by man from Gloversville. Local officials told the paper the suspect was not a member of the Klan. He was charged with peddling without a permit. In June, the paper reported KKK rally posters had surfaced in the Fulton County village of Northville, advertising a July Klan rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. Similar material surfaced in nearby Mayfield. The posters and flyers are protected by the First Amendment. The distributors were never found. Now, the Leader Herald is out with a three-part series some have likened to a sales pitch or recruiting effort on behalf of the Klan. Gloversville Mayor Dayton King blasted the series as tabloid journalism that basically gave them, people from out of the area, front-page coverage to recruit to their hate organization.
Although I can say that they have been identified, you know, through social media, and whether it was the Leader Herald's intention to do this or not, it's just unfortunate because I think now these four people are probably targets, and there's going to be some violence, unfortunately, that will happen unintendedly, from either African Americans or friends of African Americans that see this and want to stand up to it. So I think it just doesn't do anything positive for our community. You know, we've been working very hard over the course of the past few years, and businesses are looking to move in, people are looking to come here. And I would think that if somebody was, staying in our city this weekend, picks up the front page of our local newspaper and it says the KKK is thriving in Fulton County, they'd probably second-guess coming here.
The newspaper didn't respond to multiple calls for comment Tuesday morning, but its publisher told Spectrum News off-camera that he encourages readers to withhold judgment against the paper until they see what the third article in the series says. Patricia Older, the managing editor, told WRGB-TV the paper stands by the series, explaining that the veteran reporter who wrote the articles fact-checked material and verified details. But critics have charged the series made several factual errors, did not adequately push back against KKK dogma, and unnecessarily granted sources anonymity. Mayor King says it's time for a reality check.
And I think it's important, that people realize that while there may be some discrimination going on, I think in every community, I don't believe that there's 200 active members of the KKK in Fulton County. Our police chief hasn't seen that, or our sheriff.
The Fulton County Sheriff's Office forwarded a call for comment to the Gloversville Police Department, which is not commenting on the story. King, who is running for re-election in November, plans to meet with the paper's publisher and is preparing to hold a forum on race relations.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1741. Or just listen to our podcast on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.